Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. This is where we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK University Medical Center in Edison. It's part of the Hackensack Meridian Health Network. I'm Joel Katz, and on the program this week, we are pleased to welcome Dr. Anuradha Singh, attending neurologist at JFK University Medical Center and Hackensack University Medical Center, where she specializes in multiple sclerosis. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning. Hi, how are you?
Very good, very good. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this morning and educate us on all things multiple sclerosis. So let's start with that. For those who, we've all heard of it, but I would imagine that many people listening or most people can't really define it. They have an idea. Obviously, those who have dealt with it or have family members or friends who have it would know more about it. But tell us, what is MS? What is multiple sclerosis?
Yeah, so the multiple sclerosis, it's an autoimmune disease. It affects what we call the central nervous system. The central nervous system is made up of the brain, the spinal cord, and the optic nerves. And it basically, you know, helps control everything we do. We don't know exactly what causes multiple sclerosis, but what we do know is that there are certain environmental factors, genetic factors that can predispose someone to MS. But regardless, what happens is the immune system is triggered and it attacks the central nervous system. Specifically, what it's attacking is something called myelin. Myelin is like this insulating wire that kind of coats the nerves. And when that's disrupted, you get problems with everyday functions. And that's what causes the symptoms in multiple sclerosis.
Okay. So you say we don't, I believe you said we don't know what causes it, right? But it can be attributed to genetics and the environment.
Correct. Exactly. Yeah. So we can't pinpoint it to one thing, but we do know that there's a higher incidence of multiple sclerosis in people who are related to someone who already has the disease. But then again, I have a lot of patients who are not related to anyone and, you know, they have it. So we do know that there's things in the environment that also play a role. There's some studies right now going on about infections that may influence it. EBV or the Epstein-Barr virus is a hot topic right now, as well as low vitamin D levels.
Those who have this virus or those who are low in this vitamin, you're saying are more prone to getting multiple sclerosis?
Correct. That's what some research is showing right now, yes.
And can COVID cause it, do we know? Or is it more prevalent among those who've had a case of COVID?
No, that's a good question. I think there's still studies that are going into that, but no, there's nothing right now that suggests that COVID causes it. There have been some cases where having COVID may trigger a relapse of multiple sclerosis, but those are people who already have the disease that may then get an exacerbation of symptoms if they're exposed to COVID. But nothing right now that says it causes it.
Obviously, you've been through tons of training involving multiple sclerosis. Why do you think that we can't figure out what the cause is and that we can't come up with some sort of a way to cure it?
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so much. MS has made so much. Research has made a lot of progress in the last like 10, 15 years since at least I've been practicing. So there's so many more drugs that we have now than before. But right now, all the therapies and all that we have are more targeting. There are more immunosuppressants or immunomodulators to try to help slow down the progression of MS. But okay. I am optimistic that at some point, you know, I think what's difficult to say pinpoint it to one thing is that it's not one thing at this point that we know that causes MS. It's so many other different things. So the drugs that we have right now are targeting those specific things and hoping to slow down the progression. But hopefully we come up with something soon.
Okay, so what are some of those things?
So the drugs that we have right now, there's a lot of them. So they come in pill form, infusion form or IV form, as well as injection form. Back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, there was only a few drugs that were available. Now we have a lot. So basically, when I have a patient who's diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, it's a really long conversation that we have because each of these medications come with their own significant side effects. So we basically look at what symptoms does the person have at that time, how severe are they. We look at their MRI scans, and we take a look to see how much disease or the burden of disease is what we call it. And then based off of that, we kind of come up with a tailored treatment plan to each person. So MS just behaves a little bit differently in every person I've met. And thus each treatment plan should be specific to that person.
Right, right. So, all right, I want to get into the treatment of it, but let's back up a little bit and start with the symptoms. Some of the common symptoms, getting certain symptoms and I don't know what it is, and I obviously would not come to you first. What are some symptoms that would lead people to eventually get to you for treatment?
So the most common symptoms that, you know, people complain about is they may experience numbness or tingling in one of their extremities. They may have weakness where they feel like, you know, their leg went out for a period of time. And then a lot of people also complain about memory changes as well, changes with cognition, finding their words, just, you know, forgetting things over a period of time, fatigue, changes in their gait or their ability to walk. I've had people who said that they noticed that, you know, over a long period of time, they were stumbling more, or they had more frequent falls. As I mentioned, it also affects the optic nerve. So those are the nerves that go to the eyes. So some people will complain of pain with vision, or they'll have vision loss completely. Usually the symptoms that are due to multiple sclerosis, they can last, they should last for about at least a day. It can last longer. And there's different types of multiple sclerosis. So there's the what we call relapsing MS, where they may have an attack of one of the symptoms that I mentioned, and it may go away after a period of time. And that's why a lot of people actually don't come and see a neurologist or, you know, their physician after the first attack, because the symptoms go away. And then they come back. So that's why we call it relapsing, because it keeps coming back, as opposed to the other type of multiple sclerosis, which is progressive MS, and that is once the person is diagnosed and they start having symptoms, they slowly tend to get worse as time progresses.
Is the relapsing MS, is that something that just kind of stays that way their whole life? They have like a little episode and then it goes away, and then later on they'll have another episode and it'll go away, but it never progresses like the progressive MS?
Unfortunately not, no. So yeah, so a lot of times what we see with relapsing MS is that it'll eventually turn into progressive MS, especially if, you know, someone is not getting treatment and doing, you know, kind of the lifestyle modifications that we suggest.
Now, you mentioned the symptoms. Now, a lot of the symptoms you mentioned can be attributed to many things like numbness, fatigue, memory. Mm-hmm. But would you say that the gait issue, the eye pain, the fact that it lasts for at least a day, is that a I don't want to say a definite sign, but is that a true sign that it could be MS?
So yeah, so unfortunately, in with a lot of neurologic disorders, as you mentioned, the symptoms can be a little bit more nonspecific. Yes, the symptoms should last for more than a day. However, that's kind of what makes multiple sclerosis something that's a little bit more difficult to diagnose. Unfortunately, there's not, you know, one targeted sign or symptom that someone could have that we can say, yeah, you know, this is definitely multiple sclerosis. So when a person has these symptoms, if it's lasting for more, you know, than a day, then yes, they should see a physician. What would then happen is after getting a very careful, you know, history from the patient and kind of going through maybe some other symptoms that they may have had that maybe they don't even notice, the next step would then potentially be to get imaging or MRIs of the brain and the spinal cord. And then based off of what that shows us, we can also do a lumbar puncture or a spinal tap, because that fluid will also help us diagnose it. But a lot of that diagnosing MS is also ruling out things that are not multiple sclerosis. So there's a lot of other diseases out there, neurologic, as well as other autoimmune diseases like lupus or Sjogren's, or even some vitamin deficiencies and hereditary disorders that can cause all the symptoms that I mentioned. So it's important to, one, get a careful history from the person who's complaining of all of this and make sure that you've ruled out other things before you commit someone to a diagnosis of MS.
Talking with Dr. Anuradha Singh, attending neurologist at JFK Medical Center, University Medical Center, and Hackensack University Medical Center. When you diagnose somebody, have you ever had somebody come into your office? They go to their primary care physician first, and eventually it leads to you, and you specialize in multiple sclerosis. Now, has anybody come into your office with no idea about the possibility of being diagnosed, and they're surprised by it?
That's a good question. It has happened before, but honestly, I feel like I tend to get a lot of the reverse happen. I think MS is a little bit more highly publicized now, especially there have been some celebrities who've been diagnosed with MS recently. So I think there's a lot of MS awareness out there. So a lot of the times what I actually get is people who think they have MS because, they may have experienced some constellation of the symptoms that I have, mm-hmm. and they want to talk to an expert to kind of figure out, is this MS or is this something else?
Is there ever a time where you can tell almost immediately that it's not, or you definitely need all the tests that you mentioned?
I would say, from a clinical history, you can kind of gather whether or not your suspicion for MS is higher. But, I still like to do my due diligence and make sure I get all the information before saying that it is or isn't.
And when you diagnose somebody, what's the worst case scenario, best case scenario?
I guess the worst case scenario would be someone who has had symptoms for a prolonged period of time, is more progressive with their symptoms, but who is reluctant to treatment and would prefer not to be on treatment, or they delay treatment for whatever reason. Because, starting treatment, we want to try to preserve as much of the brain and the spinal cord as possible. So trying to implement healthy lifestyle as well as our treatment for MS at an earlier time from the time that you're diagnosed is ideal.
It should go without saying, but the sooner you catch it, the better.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly.
At what age? Is there an age, a particular age, where you normally start seeing symptoms? Is multiple sclerosis, you can have it at birth?
So the most common age is, it's usually a woman in their 20s to 30s. However, I feel like I am seeing a lot more people who are older who are being diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, which is interesting, as well as I've seen a lot of males now who are being, who are more diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. But the most common age is usually a woman, 20s, 30s, who will have one of the symptoms that I mentioned before.
Usually, but you can have it at a younger age as well, right? It could be any age.
Yes, you can. So pediatric multiple sclerosis is very rare, but it does happen. I have seen as young as, 3 years old who's diagnosed with multiple sclerosis.
Or diagnosed. So you mentioned there's a couple of ways. It could be genetic, it could be environmental. So I want to talk about both of those. Let's talk about genetics. Is it simply just a family history of multiple sclerosis, or are there other factors involved in the genetic part of MS?
Yeah, so there's so many genes that they've kind of, isolated to what could cause multiple sclerosis. Unfortunately, there's not just one antibody that we can test that if it's positive, you have it. So usually when I interview a person, I usually ask them if they have a history of multiple sclerosis in their family or if they have any kind of autoimmune conditions in their family. And then we also know that once you're diagnosed with MS, that you do have a risk, of your children rather, have a risk of having multiple sclerosis, and it's slightly higher in female offspring. So that's also something that's important that we like to counsel patients about.
Can someone go through their whole life having MS and never know it?
It's possible. So there's all these, subtypes of multiple sclerosis. So there is something that we call radiologically isolated syndrome. It's patients who basically have the MRI findings of someone or imaging findings of someone who has MS, but they never really had any symptoms the entire time. So they may not have gotten MRIs until later in life, or, you know, if something else happened and we just happened to see it. So it's possible that you can have these changes in the brain and the spinal cord, but then just never have any symptoms.
All right. So let's talk about the environmental causes. What are some ways one could be diagnosed with MS because of something in the environment? Are there several?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different things. So a couple of things that I mentioned before. So Epstein-Barr virus, we've seen that patients who have MS have had exposure to Epstein-Barr virus. So there's some studies right now clinical studies targeting drugs that directly affect Epstein-Barr virus. And then the other thing that I mentioned that's pretty common is vitamin D, and I think that is a little bit more well known. We know that people who live, so vitamin D, is often found like from sun exposure, and we've seen that the incidence of MS actually increases as you go away from the equator. So as you go to parts of the world where there's less sunlight, there actually happens to be more incidence of MS there. So usually that's part of counseling when I see a patient. We'll check vitamin D levels, and depending on what their levels are, they usually will require some kind of supplementation just to keep those levels a little bit higher.
So do you find, or has it been found, that people who live in cities like Seattle or countries like Ireland, where there's less sun, do you find there's more cases there?
Yeah. So there's
really?
There's just a higher incidence of multiple sclerosis. Yep, the further you go away from the equator. Again, not to say that you can't get it if you're in a region that has high sun exposure, but it is higher in those parts of the world.
Well, are you more likely to get it if you're in Seattle?
There's just a higher incidence there. So I wouldn't say, yeah. So I think it's just like, okay, if we try to isolate what maybe causes that, maybe it's related to the vitamin D level. So that's kind of where that came from.
Wow. That's interesting. Taking it back a little bit. So living where there's what about places where it's, the sun doesn't come up for 6 months, way up north, or then they would be more prone to multiple sclerosis as well.
Right. So retroactively looking at all the people, we've seen that there's higher incidences there. But again, it's not one thing that causes it. It's like just a bunch of different things. So just because you live in one of those parts of the world doesn't mean, that you're gonna have it. It's just that we've seen a higher incidence there.
Okay. Are there other environmental things, like living near a certain type of power plant? Or I don't want to throw out, anything that to cause any speculation, but is there any exposure to anything that that may cause?
There's still a lot of research being done. I don't want to say anything just at this point. Also, not to cause anything.
Right. You don't want to just throw it out there. Right. Right. We can't comment on that. I get it. All right, so let's talk about the treating. All right, first step, it depends on the severity and the type of MS you have, right? So once you determine, where do you go from there?
Yeah, so once we determine, one, what kind of MS you, what type of MS you have, and then the next thing, again, I look at is age. I look at where the lesions you have, where they are, where they're located, meaning are they in the brain? Are they in the optic nerves? Are they in the spinal cord? Where are there more lesions? And then we kind of come up with a treatment plan based off of that. The medications, they range from what we call lower efficacy medications, meaning that, you know, they're approved in MS, they work, they have lower side effects. And then we have higher efficacy medications, which are, you can think of, are more of our heavy hitters. They work so well in multiple sclerosis. We usually reserve them for people who have a higher disease burden, because they tend to come with more side effects as well. So while they work well and they're very powerful, they come with a little bit more side effects. So all of this is kind of tailored to the patient.
The medication. Are there, what other type of treatments are there?
So besides the medications, that's usually where we start. And then we kind of go up the ladder if we need to, depending on if you don't respond to a therapy, we might try a different therapy. Now, there's a lot of talk about, you know, stem cell transplant. That, though, are reserved for people who've tried a medical therapy before, who've tried multiple medical therapies before and have not responded to those medical therapies. So you can kind of think of that as more of a last resort. Aside from the medications, what we tell people to do is to try to maintain as much of a healthy lifestyle as possible. For example, we know that smoking has a higher, people who smoke who have relapsing MS have a higher rate of converting to progressive MS. So we know that smoking influences it. So we try to, you know, encourage smoking cessation. As I mentioned, we check vitamin D levels, so I make sure all of my patients are on good supplementation if needed. And then we also encourage, you know, good diet as well. We know that high salt diets can make inflammation worse, so we usually recommend kind of a heart-healthy diet. There have been lots of studies that show talk about all these different diets and MS. Unfortunately, there hasn't been one, you know, that's superior to the other, but we found that that's what the diets all have in common, is that they're kind of low salt, heart healthy diets. And then exercise is actually really important in MS as well. A lot of people with multiple sclerosis will complain about fatigue, and exercise has actually been proven to help with that. And it also helps preserve, you know, the neurologic function that the patient has and helps to improve what may be deconditioned or something that they experienced from MS.
Have you ever experienced a patient who was diagnosed and then was given medication and you narrowed it down to the perfect medication where they don't have any more symptoms at all and very little side effects, if any?
Yeah, I mean, the medications that we have now are great. I have a lot of patients who are on medications who have been stable, meaning that they don't, their MRIs are not really showing progression of disease. They're not complaining of new relapses or anything like that. And, you know, what we do is we just continue to monitor them. We check in on them a couple of times a year. We get MRIs and we make sure that the progression is, that there is no progression, rather, and then we kind of go from there. So the medications we have now are great, and that's why, you know, circling back to what I said before, we've made so much progress, leaps and bounds in MS since I started. So it is very hopeful. I think a lot of people have this preconceived notion that multiple sclerosis is automatically going to lead to all of this accumulation of disability, and, you know, their lives will forever be different. And their lives are different. You know, it is a degenerative condition, but there's so many things we can do now, I think, to help slow it down, to really make someone's life a better quality of life.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about the perception of most people. Exactly what you said. They think it's, you know, it's all downhill when...
Yes.
It's good to know that it can be halted.
Yep.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Anuradha Singh, attending neurologist at JFK University Medical Center and Hackensack University Medical Center. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge with us this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
If you'd like more info, you can go to jfkmc.org. For a podcast of the show, go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. Until next week.